We welcome you to join us on the porch. Today's show is made possible by VRC Limited. Grab a coffee or a cool lemonade and join our host, Randy Voller, for a slice of life from the perspective of one of Chatham County's most actively engaged community leaders, former mayor, real estate developer, musician, and all-around great guy. Now, here's Randy.
Welcome back on the porch, and we are so lucky that our state senator, who represents Orange Person in Caswell Counties, has decided to stay with us and do another On the Porch.
This is Greg Meyer. Thanks, Randy. Glad to be here.
And it's so great to have you here. So, you know, we had primaries a couple weeks ago, and of course we're going to have an amazing general election because, once again, both parties are going to be targeting North Carolina. So I wanted to talk to you about the primaries.
Let's go.
So a lot of interesting results. One of the first things I pointed out online to people and verbally is the lack of participation in primaries that I've been seeing going all the way back to 2008. Do you have any thoughts on that? Like, why less people are voting in primaries, even though more people live in North Carolina and we have more people registered to vote?
I haven't thought about that question overall. I'd like to hear what you think. My observation on that in this one was that the Republican turnout was much stronger than Democrats, and it's just not clear. Is that because Republicans are more fired up overall or because they had so many competitive primaries and people were coming out to vote because it really was going to make a difference? I mean, the Republican primary story this year is fascinating and complex.
I think it is, and I've had some people say to me, well, in 2024, it was pretty much decided who was going to win. You know, you're going to have President Biden, and you had a former president, and you have Trump on there, so less people would be interested. And I said, okay, I'll grant you that. Then I said, but why has the turnout in this state been trending downward? I said, let's just go back to 2012 when we had Romney on the ballot against an incumbent President Obama. I said, it's been trending downward since then, just the percentage of turnout, regardless of party.
What's your theory of why?
I think that overall in this country, there's been an effort to breed cynicism into the system and to make people feel that their vote doesn't matter and that participation is not important and that primaries are seen as partisan, so lots of folks, you know, the single biggest group of registered voters now are unaffiliated voters, which frankly is where I started when I was elected mayor and then I affiliated with the Democratic Party. But as I've told people, unaffiliated does not mean that people are in the middle of the road like an armadillo in Texas. It means that they don't want to be affiliated with a political party, but they definitely have values and a leaning.
That's right.
And in this state, you're allowed as an unaffiliated voter to pick the party you want to vote with. And I think another issue may be that because there's a lot of worry on the two biggest parties, Republican and Democrats, about not bigfooting or putting the thumb on the scale or endorsing a candidate in a primary, there's a lot of confusion from the state parties on down to the county parties of what their role is. And when I was directly involved as a county chair and a state chair and then, you know, congressional district chair, I always said our role is just to encourage GOTV, get the vote out. And you vote for whoever you want, but encourage as many people to get involved with the primary. And I'm not sure that in every county that's the case. So that's my, you know, kind of back of the napkin answer to your question.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, I think also people have to have something to vote for, right? And so in the primary, it really is for the stakes of which candidate do you want to win, and also for the candidates themselves. Is it somebody that makes you enthusiastic?
So this is some questions for you and I, just kind of talking about what happened in the primary. There were some incumbents on we'll just look at the Democratic side. Michael Ray lost. You served with him in the House.
I did, yeah, and I endorsed his opponents in that primary.
So why did you directly get involved?
Michael Ray was the ringleader of the Democrats who were working with the House Speaker to help the Republicans override governor's vetoes. I don't think he deserves to come back as a Democrat. I don't know that his community at home recognized that adequately. But you know, I don't want a Democratic colleague who's working against a team like that. As well, Rodney Pierce, who ran against him, is somebody I've known for a long time. He's an educator, as I was before getting in the General Assembly. And he's fantastic. He's brilliant. He's a great community advocate. He'll be a strong voice for Eastern North Carolina. He's exactly the type of person I want to see in the General Assembly.
So I guess since in some view, I would say that people have reduced politics to the red team and the blue team, almost like we're rooting for, you know, your favorite college team or pro team. So I'll run the analogy this way. So maybe if this guy was on my team and we're playing football, he's leaking the plays out and our quarterback's getting sacked. So you'd rather have a line that is going to protect the quarterback.
Yeah, and particularly because the issues that end up with gubernatorial vetoes are not just red team versus blue team. They're issues that have deep moral values and significant consequences to people. If they didn't matter, the governor wouldn't spend his time vetoing them and use his political capital that way. And if you're going to cross us on issues that are that important, then I'm not sure why you're on our team at all.
That's a very good point. How about right next door in Durham County? You served with Senator Woodard for years. What happened in that race, which was North Carolina Senate 22?
I mean, similar issue. I think that Senator Woodard burned himself with Durham County voters when he voted to override the governor's veto three times in one day. And Durham is about as progressive as you get. They expect for their members to have the right values and stick with the team. And then there was another issue, a significant environmental issue, which we talked about in another episode for you, particularly about wetlands, where I think the environmental community felt that Senator Woodard worked against them, even though he had previously been considered to be an environmental champion. And he got a strong primary challenger from Sophia Chitlick, and I think she was able to kind of galvanize folks who were paying attention and build enough momentum to be able to take out an incumbent.
Were you watching what happened in your local races, in your district? For instance, Phyllis Porta Ascott won her race with 72% of her vote for Orange County Board of Commissioners.
Yeah, that wasn't a huge surprise because Phyllis has been a community leader in Northern Orange County and for a long time and led the Northern Orange Black Voters Alliance, et cetera. She'd already been appointed to the board, and this was an election to hold that seat. So she definitely had some level of incumbent advantage.
How about what happened in the school board race? That was interesting.
School board race is another one that I got directly involved in. It matters a lot to me as an educator and as a parent of kids in the Orange County schools. I've spent more of my personal time and investment in Orange County schools organizing than any other political organizing, and also my volunteer leadership just directly in those schools. So it mattered a lot. And there were really two slates. And I know in Chatham County, y'all have had a lot of elections with slates, one slate against the other. But that doesn't often happen in Orange County. But it did in the school board race. And my take was that there was one slate that was using a lot of dog whistle, racial political terms, trying to focus on taking us backwards, and another slate that was focused on building a resilient and equitable school system that looks out for every single kid. And I supported that slate, and the three members of that slate won, although there's going to be a recount on – a runoff on one of the last seats.
So I think Kerry Doyle won, Jennifer Moore won, Bonnie Hauser was fourth. Who was the other one that won?
Wendy Padilla won.
Wendy Padilla won.
First time to have a Latino member of the school board.
Well, we'll be back after the break on the porch with Senator Greg Meyer.
You're listening to On the Porch with Randy Voller, made possible by VRC Limited. Welcome back to On the Porch. Randy Voller and his friends bringing local flavor with zesty conversation. Come on up and grab a chair.
Welcome back on the porch. We're here with Senator Greg Meyer, who represents Orange Person in Caswell Counties, and we're talking about elections. So just looking backward a little bit again on what happened in the primary, anything else jump out to you about this last primary?
So to me, the biggest thing was that the Republicans elected an incredibly MAGA far-right ticket and tossed out a ton of establishment Republicans. Every legislative Republican, all of my colleagues who are running for statewide or congressional seats, every one of them lost to an outsider who was more right-wing than them, with the exception of Tim Moore, who had Donald Trump's endorsement.
So I often we used to get the NASCAR analogy, especially when I was talking to my friends or people I knew on the Republican side, and they would say, "Oh, well, in these primaries, just think of us racing, and we got to go to the right." And I always would say, "Well, when we're racing, doesn't that mean you're hitting the wall? Why don't you take a risk and pass them, like go down on the go to the left of them and go?" You know, I said Teddy Roosevelt wasn't a MAGA Republican. Or Dwight Eisenhower or anyone that my family supported.
Yeah, their base at this point is clearly so far to the right that these folks that I serve with, it is not like they are old-fashioned Roosevelt Republicans. These are pretty conservative folks. They voted for a lot of really bad conservative legislation, but they still weren't conservative enough for the Republican primary voters.
Well, here's one that always confuses me when you talk about folks that are doing that, why are they voting for things that create bad water? I mean, when we do polling, I never get anyone saying, you know, we want terrible, awful water that's going to kill us. Why do they do that?
Because they vote the interests of the state's largest industries and take the party, the line of their donors and what the industries want rather than what their communities need. I mean, it's kind of astounding on water, right? Like water really is an issue where it's like, wait, like we have an entire polluted river system from PFAS and you're not willing to hold anybody accountable for that? We got people who are drinking bottled water or water with chemicals in it and you're not willing to take any action? It's absurd.
It's a giant issue in Orange and Chatham County and the Triangle, of course, with the Haw River and all of this investment coming to our area and economic growth, people who are coming here, businesses that are moving here, want clean water.
I have a bill that would allow the State Department of Environmental Quality to set preliminary water contamination limits for emerging chemicals because there's new chemicals being made every day, right? And so this would say, like, a new chemical comes out. If it's going to go get released into the water, then DEQ gets to say what level in the water is safe. I haven't been able to get traction on that bill because the big chemical companies don't want us to have regulatory authority over them. And so the only way that we can regulate their chemicals now is for it to come through a piece of legislation. We shouldn't have to regulate every single chemical with a new piece of legislation.
Well, they're constantly changing the chemistry and they're saying it's new and different and it's proprietary. So you might find this a bit humorous. Years ago, I was invited to a discussion where it was myself, you know, and I was someone who was questioning hydraulic fracturing for Chatham County and going under Jordan Lake, and a fellow from the petrochemical industry. So I brought myself my, you know, giant Yeti cup, and he starts talking about, well, you know, what we're doing is safe and we're putting these chemicals into the ground and it's fine. And I said, well, I brought this cup to the meeting. I'm not going to tell you what's in this cup, but I assure you personally that it's fine. Would you drink it in front of this audience? And he would not.
Of course not.
Because he wasn't quite sure what I put in it.
He's not a dummy. He just thinks everybody else is.
Exactly. As I said, you're not telling us what you're pumping into our water supply, but you want us to believe it's safe.
Right.
And you're hiding behind the corporate shield that this is proprietary. But, you know, that seems rather unfair when people are dying as a result of these chemicals.
It's exploitation of our land and it's exploitation of our people, all for corporate gain.
It's a giant issue in Pittsburgh, which is experiencing a tremendous amount of growth. I mean, our attorney general, who's running for, obviously, Governor Josh Stein, was down there with a minority leader, Robert Reeves, a couple weeks ago at the water treatment plant because they put in this very expensive GAC system. And, you know, they got investment, I think, from the Inflation Reduction Act and the state to deal with this exact issue.
Yep. Which is like you're having to deal with it on the downstream side when we could just limit it on the upstream side. And you wouldn't have to do all that if we stopped them from putting it in the water in the first place.
And to be fair to the cities, Greensboro and Burlington, for example, it's not them. It's going through their wastewater treatment plant. So it's a point source discharge. But they don't know exactly who of these industrial providers is putting this in. Right?
Because we won't regulate it.
Okay, so when we're looking at this election coming down and you were talking about – who on the other side, a lot of folks, you know, got wiped out in these primaries on the Republican side. Let's go to the top of the ticket. I mean, we have a contrast like no other across this country.
That's right. We do. Donald Trump, Mark Robinson, Dan Bishop, Shell Morrow. I mean, the Republicans put forward a ticket that is the most extreme ticket that a major party has put forward probably ever. The statements that those folks have made will saturate our airwaves for the entire year. I actually am afraid that Democrats are only going to use negative advertising of trying to make people vote against these crazy Republicans. And we should vote against these crazy Republicans. But gosh, it also should be so easy for us to give people something to vote for. What's our message that's an alternative to theirs? Why do we have a better vision? What can we deliver that they can't? There's never been a larger lane that's opened up for Democrats to succeed, but you can't fill that lane by only saying negative things about the other guys.
Well, I think part of the problem is there's been a resistance since the Democratic Leadership Council and various groups started triangulating back in the 80s on message to try to deal with kind of the change then politically. But people have been afraid to go back to the New Deal. Our president has not been afraid to go back and say, we're going to invest in states, we're going to invest in communities. And clearly to me, a big difference is Democrats like yourself – like to invest in building infrastructure like schools, like libraries, like community centers, like ag centers. And I noticed that our brethren on the other side a lot of times likes to invest in building jails.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, simply put, if you go look at what gets built in a county, you can just see what county commissioners or municipalities fund.
Yes. Yes. I mean, we should be talking about investments that we want to make in the state. We also should be reminding people about freedoms. And you know, right now, it couldn't be more clear that Democrats are the party of freedom. We want you to be free from chemicals in your water. We want you to be free to have control over your own body and healthcare decisions. I mean, we can keep on going down the list, but we are the party of freedom trying to face off against a party of authoritarianism.
Well, we'll stop right there and come back after the break with Senator Greg Meyer. We'll see you after the break on The Porch.
You're listening to On The Porch with Randy Voller, made possible by VRC Limited. Welcome back to On The Porch. Randy Voller and his friends bringing local flavor with zesty conversation. Come on up and grab a chair.
Welcome back on The Porch for our last segment here with our state senator. We were just talking about this upcoming election. I've been hearing all my life here in North Carolina, this is the most important election of your lifetime. And you know, after a while, you get jaded to that message.
Sure.
But right now, is. Right now,
I mean, I'm everyone is. The thing that's funny about that statement is every election is the most important because it's the one that sets the tone for the next portion of your lifetime. But the stakes are high this year. I think that you can feel it in the public. I think people are so concerned about things. And some of that shows up in people being active and trying to figure out how to get engaged. And some of that shows up in people throwing their hands up in the air and saying, I can't believe that we have the same choices and we're stuck in the same place we were 4 years ago. We just can't afford to have those people stay home.
So one of the things I think is frustrating, especially when you're looking at Gen Z, Generation Z, generation, you know, the millennials, a lot of folks have not experienced the success of the boomers and some of the Gen X, which I'm a Gen Xer and I think you're a Gen Xer. What message do you have to our younger cohort as to, number one, you should vote, and number two, why you should be voting for a Democrat?
Well, first of all, I think that we do too much talking about young people and not enough talking to them. And, you know, they're just like kids in our house when you're parents and you're talking about the kids, but you're not talking to them. They hear you and they get a little irritated. They're sitting in the same room. So, I mean, that's one thing is I think we need to have ways to talk directly to them and with them and listen to them. To me, it's pretty clear. Like, I think that we know from young people today what their concerns are across all issues. On economics, their biggest concern is about housing, and we should be talking to them about things that we can do to make it easier to enter into becoming a homeowner, types of programs to support down payments and support you in becoming a first-time homeowner. We should be just talking about building more units where they can buy in into kind of that missing middle housing that makes it easier for them. We should be proposing a renter's tax deduction the same way that those of us pay a mortgage get a tax deduction, because so many young folks could benefit from that. If they could get a slight tax deduction on the rent that they pay, they could use that to save up for a down payment to become a homeowner. Let's take another issue. Let's talk about climate. We know how much climate matters to young folks, the future of the environment. We've got an incredible record to run on from what Joe Biden has done on climate. We need to talk to young people about that. And I think we have to talk to them in really concrete ways about what are we going to do right here in North Carolina, including the opportunity we have to be a state that produces more electric vehicle batteries and a ton of electric vehicles than any other state, and to fuel those with offshore wind and solar. And so we can be the nation's leader in the electric vehicle revolution, and we can to be a leader on climate for the entire world if we pursue that. Let's talk about guns. I've been working a ton with UNC students after the campus shooting last year. They're very active and very aware of it. The vast majority of the public agrees on a number of common sense restrictions on guns, and we should be talking to young people directly and saying, we understand that it's your lives who have been the most at risk in mass shootings, and we're going to do something to stop that and protect you.
Well, those are all three very compelling issues that we should take leadership on. Affordable living, making people feel safer, and addressing, you know, common sense gun legislation, and our environment.
That's right. And I think if we can deliver that message directly to young people and engage them, then they will vote. They'll vote because they know that this is the most important election of their lifetime.
Well, we'll end it right there. I hope to have you again on the porch before Election Day. Thanks for coming up.
Good to be on the porch, Randy.
And we'll be back next week.
You've been listening to On the Porch with Randy Voller on 97.9 The Hill. Catch episodes on demand at chapelboro.com/ On the Porch.